You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Tuesday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition of the 5 o'clock shadow with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Now, Nick, I always start with you because you're rarely around because you're so busy. So, yes. First of all, the first question, you have to write this down because there's three observations here.
Yes,
number one, why?
My pen's in my hand. Right?
Okay.
Number one.
Why? Why is the market down? So remember that one. And the other thing is that when the S&P was 0.2% up, the S&P futures this morning, I looked at the JSE and thought, goodness me, there's going to be a relief rally here on the JSE. And I looked at it and it was flat. And then I looked again an hour later and the all share top 40 and the all share itself was also flat. And I thought, which continent is right here? Is it the African continent and the JSE, or is it the S&P 500 futures traders, you know, Europeans and Americans, etc.? And I didn't know. And then the other thing is that David and I yesterday were speaking about the fact that we didn't think the market was going to go to a new low, i.e. the low that's been put in place this year. It would just make a double bottom and then sort of stabilize and go up. So first question to answer, Nick Kunze. Why today is it down suddenly, not horribly, but certainly down substantially?
Okay, so the question why is, it appears to be because there are the news coming out that basically that the Taiwanese authorities fired at a Chinese drone in their waters. But I mean, obviously it's a little bit murky. There's no real news coming out on much probably, but it's just not a good story. And of course, this is what everyone's been muting for years.
Mm.
Yeah. At what point, what happens, if China decides to invade Taiwan? Anyway, this seems to be a bit of escalation off the back of that. And then just generally, there's been that's what spooked the markets to start with. And as that sort of fell, I mean, risk has absolutely smacked. But everything in general today just rolled over, you know. Also, funny enough, ironically, there was some pretty good data out of Wall Street as well. I mean, jobs openings, record rise in job openings, which is going to obviously add to worries about the Fed's, you know, they need to take an aggressive approach to bring down inflation. So that's not helping the story either. So ironically, the good news, that U.S. jobs market is on fire.
Yeah.
While it leads to a massive reversal, you know, probably on the back of the fact that they're going to have to raise rates, you know, aggressively and continue to do so. But the U.S. market itself, actually in the economy, I don't think it's in bad shape, David. I mean,
no, I don't know why the Fed are absolutely obsessed with bringing down the economy. And I listened to Kaskari as well, and he's getting delight that the market has taken a crash.
Yeah, but he was ridiculous comments, man.
I know.
People are losing money, and you sort of comment that it's a good thing. Makes no sense.
You know, just think of people who've got their
401ks,
and other issues like that. You don't have to say anything. This is our policy. This is what we're going to do. Forget about the market. But unless they think that a strong market is going to create the wealth effect, which is going to just kind of fire up spending. But it doesn't work that way. And I just think that this obsession now to get the markets crashing and down and
makes no sense.
Inflation, I agree with you.
It makes no sense in an economy like America, the world's biggest economy, where I saw some very good research notes the last few days that came out from a couple of houses. I think it was Morgan Stanley was one of them, where they spoke about the balance sheets of a lot of the Americans.
They good. No one's battling. I think so. I just take this in my stride and say, okay, you know, just dig in. This will sort its way out. This will sort itself
out.
Sorry,
guys, just taking you off and putting you onto a
normal
one.
Okay, you take a call because I'm going to ask David a question. Because David, Nick spoke about drones and Taiwan and China. And also,
I didn't know that.
There's a couple of, no, nor did I. There's a couple of, warships that are in the Straits, the South China Straits, American warships, and that has sort of made the Chinese bristle. And also, the other thing that, I mean, you know that geopolitics never really amounts to anything unless it's World War. The one thing that really disturbed me this morning was that the China and Russia are conducting joint military operations.
Yes, almost, they are.
And that to me is more disturbing than a drone being shot down. And I was going to ask David if in his experience, experience geopolitics ever amounts to anything when it comes to markets, and probably not. So, David, you go on with that, and then Nick can come in.
You know what worries me is, Lindsay, we never thought that Putin would ever attack Ukraine. I don't think this will go to those levels, because there are going to be no winners out of this. No one, in other words, no one's going to come out positive. Don't underestimate, when I say China's reliance on the U.S. and on Western economies. You know, it can't survive on its own, and it certainly can't survive just with its immediate neighbors and so on. It needs a world economy to sell its goods into. So I think they're in a tough position at the moment. Their economy is not in good shape. They're still battling. They're putting in a lot of stimulus. So I think this is just saber rattling. And
hope so.
Worry about it. I don't. You know, I don't want to take my eye off the ball. But I don't. I don't think anybody's going to be a winner coming out of this. Nor will the U.S.
You know, no, they won't. The you know, the funny thing. They've got nothing to gain. And, you know, you touched on a point there about geopolitics in that normally you look through the cycle. But, you know, these markets are fairly efficient because up to yesterday, the VIX had been up about 5 days in a row. And it's actually very elevated. You know, it's sitting at 27%. That's high. You know, that's implying that volatility is definitely here. And the risks of things continuing to be extremely uncertain are here. And I think that's quite accurate. That's exactly what it's doing. And we haven't even touched on the fact, guys, that this morning, I mean, the German inflation print that we got this morning, I mean, obviously there's been so much happened since 8 o'clock this morning. Yes. But, I mean, that came in at 8.5%, 8.8% year on year. I mean, the ECB's target is 2. 2%. I mean, they could, the inflation print could exceed 10% in the next few months, and their target is 2. So this, you think the Fed are, I think the Fed are, yeah, they, I mean, they're trying to catch up. The ECB are miles behind.
I had a conversation with a German chap this morning, and an analyst, and he was just explaining, he says, you have no idea what it's going to do to consumer spending in the, you know, in Germany. He says, you know, when people get their electricity bills at the end and they've got the fuel bills and other bills, he says, you have no, you know, and in fact, I wrote down the quote. He says, you know, you walk around Main Street in Germany, he says, and you cannot believe the prices, meaning the prices of all goods there, food, everything like that. So he's quite cautious about consumer spending. He's gone to consumer staples, you know, moving away from consumer discretionary now to consumer staples, which are the things that you know, that we need, toothpaste and toilet papers and tissues and everything. So, I was quite shaken by his attitude, but I think that they're in a far better position than perhaps, we think. You know, I think they're a lot more stable, than so and so, you know, than perhaps other nations. But the other thing that he was kind of worried about was that he says, you know, if the German, because if the German government comes to their assistance, of course, it then translates into, higher taxes and so on. And anyway, but he was quite perturbed and quite cautious about exactly what you're saying now and how this translates, you know, to the normal, just to the ordinary German in the street, I suppose to the ordinary European in the street as well.
Tell me about it. It's interesting, and Nick, we'll talk about David now behind his back, because interesting to see what he characterises as staples in his basket. just wait a second. Okay, I've written it down here. It says toothpaste, toilet paper, and tissues. Do you think we're going to be like that when we're his age? What's going
on?
What
else is there? Well, for David, there's probably quail's eggs, caviar anymore.
Ferraris, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I did see an interview with a German minister today on a channel called Euronews, which is particularly bad, but I watched it anyway. And they're worried about this. They're worried about the gas supplies. They're worried about rising inflation. Mm. They're worried about the economy. He admitted, he said, we're in recession now. We are already in recession, and
the other thing to remember as well is that they're all heading into winter coming up.
Yeah.
So they're slowly coming to the end of summer.
Nick,
yeah.
they were worried about load shedding or cutting back electricity.
Yes.
You know, how this will affect them, their own lives, as well as factories and other things like
what
this.
Is this not the story of the year? Is this the story of the year? Not necessarily Ukraine, but the cost of energy and company and countries like Germany going back to coal, reopening up their coal plants.
And the move to nuclear as well. I mean, there's such a big movement now to reopen or to start to commission nuclear power because of the threat of the biggest gas supplier to Europe, i.e. the former Soviet Union, Russia. And so, the last 2 years, never mind COVID, the last 6 months or to 9 months has been quite extraordinary. And you two chaps as asset managers will have to have a serious look at the various sectors and say to yourselves, what do we do here? Is this a game changer?
Well, I did laugh because I had a meeting all afternoon, and when you called me, I'd just come out of a meeting and looked at why the market was down, and there was a headline about the Taiwanese that attempted to shoot down a Chinese drone. I was like, goodness me, I mean, can anything else happen this year?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't enough to have a couple of container ships stuck in the Suez Canal. Do you have to start shooting down drones? I mean, come on, give me a break.
No, I tell you what, the end of the year is going to, the beginning of the year is going to have nothing compared with what's going to happen over the next 4 or 5 months, whatever it is. Anyway, let's get to some JSE-specific stories. Lots of results out. Smaller companies, which need not detain us unless one of you puts your hand up. Master Drilling, Stardio, Harmony, Old Mutual, that's quite a big one. Supergroup as well. Brimstone came out. Maybe David, no, Nick, Old Mutual. Sorry, David, I'm marginalising you here.
Old Mutual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a perennial underperformer, and I mean, we have clients that own the share. We owned it as Sunderland Private Wealth in some of our portfolios. I mean, this thing has done nothing. Every time I look at it, it's like 11 Rand 50 or 11 Rand something. Today it went under 11. It dropped 8% to 10 Rand 57.
Gosh.
But just a disappointing set. And for a business that at one stage was part of the S&P 500 Fortune's biggest worldwide companies, they've certainly just done nothing for the better part of a decade. And I don't know. It's just, as I say, I'm not going to bash a fellow company who's a similar business as us. But as shareholders, it's been a huge disappointment for us. And you look at this now and you think, is this thing ever going to get up to 20, 21, 22 Rand again? I don't know. These earnings are very, very average. Very average. I mean, we were looking for a bigger dividend. They didn't give it. They're one of the few, I thought all the other mutual insurance companies came out and said, you know, we're fairly upbeat about looking forward to what happened after COVID. They still came out seeming quite mentioning difficult years and provisions for claims, and I don't know, it wasn't a great outlook, and I think that's what spooked the market, as well as being a little bit stingy, I think, on the divvy as well.
There was a time when I lived in Johannesburg, Nick and David, when I was driving along William Nicol, and I had to go to St. Stephen's to pick up one of my children. I turned left into Peter Place, and there was this big billboard, and it was a Liberty Life billboard, and it says, it was almost apologetic. It said, okay, things aren't great, but we're getting there. It was that sort of sentiment. Is that, David, what you would say about Old Mutual? It's just doing nothing at the moment.
Oh, look, and also they've been plagued with management issues as well. And I think that said a lot. I know that Ian Williamson's trying to turn it around as well. But like Nick, you know, we've had all the other players coming out with much better numbers. And when you went through this, all the major metrics were down. You know, losses, yes, we did well, but this was offset by that, you know, and so on. And it's a worrying concern, you know, for the market to take it down 7% today. Admittedly, yes, it wasn't a great day in the market, but I think that just gives you a vote of how people feel, or a feel there. It's just not keeping up with the
also,
others.
And also David touched on the point about, you know, just like the lot of shenanigans. You know, the very unsavory incident with Peter Moyo.
Yeah.
You know, you try to sue them for $250 million, and you want to drag in a whole lot of other board directors. I mean, that should not be front page news, or the salacious scandals and this. Mm. You're constantly running a business. You guys have been going sideways to down for the better part of a decade. And yet everyone's preoccupied about someone fighting for 250 million rand in damages. So, it just, as David said, it just added to the overall feeling about this business. I would, I would say just avoid. If you're a shareholder, for now, I'm sorry, I'm also a shareholder, but I would avoid the share until we get some direction. It doesn't seem to have a game plan.
Nick, without bringing up history, I think when they went in 1998, from that point, it's just been a disaster. You know,
is that when they listed offshore?
They listed offshore as well. And they had these great ambitions of expanding the business. Oh. And which went flop. They
plans
went
of grandeur.
Bought, the remember, they bought the asset managers in the U.S. just before the internet bubble crashed, and so on. And they came back to Cape Town with their tail between their legs, and unfortunately, just haven't done anything.
Yeah, I think the last year or two
goes back before the rudders
too. Lack of leadership.
A lack of leadership as well.
Yeah,
you know, if you had a brand like this, you virtually sit, you don't have to do anything. You know, you just knock on a door and say, "I'm from the old mutual."
I remember the late 90s or whenever it was, looking through the Fortune 500 every year. They had the top 500 companies listed in the world. And I always used to love looking for South African companies just when I was living in London. Just was nice sort of feel good, you know. And Old Mutual were always on the list. Always. Yeah. I mean, these guys were monsters. They're enormous assets under management.
David loves the idea of the person knocking at the door. I mean, it's almost like the Avon lady in England selling women lipstick
don't
and things like that.
Man from the proof.
It wasn't that many moons ago.
A very nice suit.
Exactly. But there was an Old Mutual shop in Robertson High Street. And
was there?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Maybe it was 7-8 years ago, which isn't that long ago. I remember driving through Robertson and seeing this Old Mutual shop, and I thought, what are they selling? Memorabilia or something? It was very funny. They don't do that anymore. But anyway, gentlemen.
Green ties or something.
Something like that.
They do knock on the door. You know, that's a big part of the... Yeah, because that's how they sell funeral policies and so on. And if you recall the results during lockdown, one of the big issues is that they couldn't sell policies because it was very much a personal thing. Yeah.
Supergroup, David, I'll go with you on this one. Was it a dividend story? Because when the results came out, I saw a dividend declaration, and it was up 3.5% after about half an hour of trading, and I thought it must be a dividend story, or was it something deeper than that?
No, it's good results right across the board. Impressive. Look, coming from a low base, but all the divisions did well, and particularly well in Australia. Oi, hello. So
party time at Sasfin again.
No, not us. I'm at home.
Oh, I see. Go on.
But I mean, but an impressive result. And they do give warnings, though. They do give warnings about what lies ahead. And I think this is just general. You know, every result is coming out with a health warning about what could happen. But, you know, am I wrong, but I read, just a few months ago, there were problems with the company. And I know the share price dropped or something, but they seem to have recovered from it. And I can't find that the article or what happened there. But, I mean, if you go through everything here, very good result, save supply chain in Europe, which I think is a very small part of their business.
But also just to add, just from a valuation, because I mean that's ultimately what we do. It's not an expensive share. It's trading at single digit price to earnings. It's been a little bit of lagger. It's down 14% year to date. I love seeing businesses, and I'm sure David does as well. When they come up with a nice big final dividend, it's more than a third. It just shows their cash flow is really good, and it's a little bit of a cyclical business, but nice to see them paying shareholders back and rewarding them as well. And I think this one looks. I pull this back. If you put Old Mutual in front of your Supergroup, I'd much rather be buying Supergroup after these earnings.
Supergroup it is. Let's have a look at the spot prices now, where the rand is under a wee bit of pressure. It's 1.3% weaker against the US dollar. Dollar rand is 16.93. British pound against the rand, 19.74, which is more or less flat, actually. Euro rand is 16.95. Euro dollar is par 15. In other words, 1.0015 is the amount of dollars that 1 euro will buy you. The British pound, the cable against the US dollar, is getting a little bit stuffed. The British pound, that is. It's 1.1665. Gold price, $1,725, down 1.5%, or $26. Platinum, down $44 an ounce to $833. Yeah. If you have a look at a graph of the PGMs, I mean platinum and palladium, particularly platinum, horrible. $833 for platinum now. Palladium down 16 to 2107. Now, the oil price has been all over the place in the last 72 hours or so. I'm just going to refresh my screen, excuse me, gentlemen, because I'm sure I saw it at 105 this morning. It's now $100.50 per barrel, down 4.4%. In West Texas.
You could have looked over the last few weeks and you would have said, oh, the oil price is round about 100. But that does not tell the full story.
It was. It was 105 this morning. It's now just about to break down through 100. West Texas crude, $92.47. Natural gas prices have also fallen 4.7% to 8.95, and other commodities across the board, copper down 2%, soybeans down 2.75%, wheat down 2.75%, iron ore down 2.75%, and so it goes on. It's just a risk off day, actually. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield is 3.14. Let's call it 3.14%, which is about 3 basis points higher for the yield. The South African 10-year has had a horrible day, 11 basis points higher at 10.36%. Bitcoin, in case you care, 19,750, which is down 2.6%. Movers on the JSC, starting with new Nick, please, and I'll give you mine in a moment, but they're a little bit dreary. Give me some exciting ones, up and down.
But if I can just add that you said it's a risk off day. The three things I'd look at to quantify exactly what you said to back it up is Bitcoin. It is a proxy for risk, believe it or not, for speculation. It's down 2% at 19,700. You mentioned you haven't mentioned the rand dollar exchange rate, which is down a full an EM.
I did, I know what you mean.
Oh, you did. Sorry, you did. And just in general, and the VIX up at elevated at 27. So there's your risk. But just having a quick look at what are the movers and shakers were on the JSE today. Top of my leaderboard, you spoke about it. I mean, Supergroup had a really nice set of results, 4.8. Funny enough, Sun International, if you watched that share price the last few days, David, it's had a really, they came out with a really nice set of numbers. And
they're going into betting. They're moving into sports betting, which I don't know whether that's going to elevate their profits on that, but whatever.
Mm. Okay.
You know, any company that's in Mauritius, I get suspicious of, but nevertheless.
Suspicious of Mauritius.
But some other. Very good. But just some other ones that popped up for me as well. JSC Limited shares, those have been quiet for a while, given the lackluster volumes, but that was up on the leaderboard as well. Had a bit of a decent day. And then the downside, Old Mutual. I mean, Harmony Gold Mining this morning, we didn't speak about that.
Monstrous.
Then it came up as a trading update. Terrible, terrible set of numbers. Down 11%. And then I couldn't find any reasons why. He made a joke that maybe they've got a forestry in Taiwan. But I have no idea why Sappi's down 8% today.
There's no news on it. There's nothing.
They've got like a giant pulp forest in Taiwan or something. Yeah. just a soggy, as you said, risk-off day. I mean, Sibanye, PPC, ArcelorMittal. I mean, Tumba Iron Ore, Thungela reversing big time off. It's a massive run. Dave's going to have to rejig that Cristal challenge after today's numbers.
I must tell you that Rebosis has been, a lot of chaps had Rebosis, which was an early leader in the early days, and it's gone into business rescue. So you write it down to zero. It's written it down to zero together with Tongod. You know, nothing.
Well, I don't want to be frivolous here. Yeah. But when you call a company Rebosis, then I'm sorry, you're doomed to failure. It sounds like a Sir David Attenborough film, a proboscis monkey. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I always think about Rebosis.
Specialist about that Rebosis.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point.
That's unfair of me. I mean, Quilter.
Is a bit, yeah. So, just in summary, it's soggy risk off day. I mean, really not much to write home about, except tomorrow's better. It's the last day of the month tomorrow. I mean, couldn't they have waited till the first of the statements go out?
The one thing, Nick, there are a couple of
predate them, Nick.
Stadio came out with its numbers, and it comes on the back of yesterday's Advertech. I've liked Advatec. I've preferred it as an entry into that market. But I mean, if you look at both Curo and Stadio and this, they started to look a lot better than they did years ago when they were trading at those ridiculous PEs. You know, I had a close look at Stadio, and it's, you know what impressed me is that this is all, this is, you know, not Varsity College, what do they call it? Mill Park and
Millcourt Business School.
You know, that's they offer a huge number of what they call distant learning. So anyway, you know, which is most
huge
of the business.
Growth area,
Anyway, just worth looking at. The other one was I looked at Master Drilling, and it's funny that we're talking about commodities.
I thought it was so good. It's just liquidity, though.
It's a $2 billion company. I thought, by the way that people act, this is a $20 billion company. It's not. It's only $2 billion.
No, it's more.
But the only point that I liked is that they're ramping up their EV, you know, with a ramp up in EV demand, electric vehicle demand, you know, they're looking to go back into copper and nickel and this. And there's quite a strong view, which also came out of Bulletin about, you know, the future of copper, nickel, and the, what do they call him? Not the, the future facing minerals. That's what they call
You mean like the rare earths, so the sort of EV metals?
Really. Lithiums and things,
I know we're coming out of a lot
lithium
of
lithium and cobalt and copper and all that.
But the miners are thinking different. You know, they're not perturbed by what's happening at the moment.
And so I just keep going back and looking at some of these balance sheets of the miners. And David, you're a numbers man. We know you are. Like, I mean, look at some of those balance sheets, those financial statements from BHU Billiton. I mean, they are. I mean, some of these American companies which are indebted, they'd love to have balance sheets as well run as these businesses. So I think they're still holding themselves in good stead. I haven't seen any negative comments coming out from the miners of the last reporting season at all.
No.
Contrary to what the share price.
And yet we see Harmony down 11.07%. Percent today, which is
Harmony wasn't great. Harmony wasn't great, but the diversified miner has been pretty decent.
Yeah. Nick, we have to talk to you about something. Well, David and I have to grill you now, because yesterday we spoke about two things that happened, and they coincidentally happened on the same day: Massmart and Grindrod. Grindrod Shipping. Give us your views on that. Are they delisting from the JSE? This is a good thing because people like South African companies, or is it a bad thing because they might not be on the exchange anymore? Please give us your views briefly, if you would.
So, I mean, Grindrod has already had sort of one foot out of here anyway. It might not have been, it might have been listed on the JSE, but I mean, its head office was in Singapore. It made no secret its entire management and board was sitting in Singapore. And it's been that way for a number of years, and they've made no secret of the fact that Remgro, who are one of the majority shareholders, have been pushing for a while to sort of realize value. Decided that it's time to, they've got a cash deal. Look, it's a great deal for shareholders. And I must say, just in my 2 cents worth, you know, the shipping business and my experience of dealing with the shipping business and dealing quite closely with Grindrod, it's cyclical, hey? It's not, and you think the miners are cyclical, the shipping is on a different level. When you buy your ships, when you build them, when you order them, when you tie in your lease rates, your different sizes, there's different sizes of the dry bulk vessels they run. They've got a core of about 30, 31 of these dry bulk vessels, all based out of Singapore. Share price has bounced back quite nicely. I mean, it's up, what, 4 or 5-fold just in the last couple of years. But I think for shareholders, I think it's a very good deal. I do. It's disappointing to have a share delist from the JSE, but yeah, it wasn't very liquid. It didn't trade as much as you thought. It was only in the headlines recently because it's like, you know, quadrupled the share price.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a great traded share. The average daily volume was minimal, and quite frankly, I think it was probably cost them more to be listed than unlisted, quite frankly.
I put forward the idea yesterday that they split it up and listed it in the United States in order to make it easier for TMI to buy it. I don't know. I don't know the technicalities. TMI,
They were different businesses, I think. Completely different businesses.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's only a 7.5 billion rand company.
Yeah, it's not big. And, it's not big.
Yeah.
Okay.
But listen to this. Listen what we've lost, eh?
Go on.
We're going to lose Mediclinic. I'm just thinking, which other one? Mediclinic? Massmart?
Yeah, Distell.
Distell.
Distell, maybe.
Grindrod Shipping.
Grindrod Shipping, yeah.
Imperial Logistics, gone. Long for Life, gone. I think a couple of other, which one? Those are all recently. I don't know which others are going to start.
You will do.
Now you understand. It's a great shame, but I mean, you know, as a money manager like David and I mean, you present with so many sort of more varied options offshore now, as less and less attractive businesses remain in South Africa. And the ones that are attractive, the management and the shareholders are saying, well, you don't think we're attractive like we do, and we've got an offer and we're going. We don't, there's no point in being listed.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it is a great shame, and hopefully they can reverse it, but it's a shame. It's sad to see businesses leave the bourse. I mean, it's where you want, where you want them to stay.
I'm riding something for Friday, Nick, on that. And I just said that the train rolled out the station 30 years ago with the changes that we saw here. And there's nothing you can do. It's a global issue. There's
nothing you do.
In countries like the US where you've got so many small caps and you've got so much money, and it's a different story.
It boils down to the very, very basics of like economics 101. And when you first learn in finance, like, why do you want to be listed on the stock market? And it's two very simple options. It's usually to raise capital. Number one, or secondly, it's some original shareholders might be looking to exit before you create a secondary market. Those are the reasons why you have capital markets. And the advent of the last 10 or I wouldn't go as far back as David writing in his article 30 years, but even just up to 10 years ago, when interest rates around the world were artificially dropped to zero and negative in Europe, you could borrow money for free, for nothing. Why the cost of listing on a regulated exchange if you had to raise funds?
Right.
You can borrow for nothing, for zero. Mm-hmm. So it's just a mathematical decision. Why lumber shareholders with listing requirements, regulatory costs, compliance, answering to shareholders all the time? They can be so irritating, our shareholders. You can just go straight to the bank and you can borrow however much you want to for zero.
Well, Nick, this is very, very important. 1%. Nick, what you've just said is terribly important. Never mind the listing, whether to list or not to list, whether to delist because of private equity take out and go private. It's all to do with the price of money, and everyone, as a whole legion of traders.
Lindsay, you hammer on it all the time. Your cost of money. That's what we do.
That's exactly right.
Buy and sell risk.
Exactly. Now, there's Nick. I want you to give me the closing indices and also the value traded, and then I'm going to talk to David about something called the Crystal Challenge. So you give us the real stuff, and then we'll go to David's little fantasy world. Okay, Nick.
My fantasy world.
All right. Let's do the real stuff. So JC Allshare, really not a good day in the office. We made back a little bit yesterday off our lows yesterday afternoon session, but that was short-lived because today we dropped 1,306 points, closing at exactly the low on the day, down 1.89%. Does not bode well for the technical analysts out there. The top 40 tradable index, the company's index down 1.96%, a fair little worse, 61,321. Those who are interested, the number is 1,225 points down. Really wasn't much strength. Academic and educational services, like literally 3 pips higher. But David touched on Stadio and a few of those companies that reported. So there's a little bit of no selling there. But overall, healthcare down 0.8, real estate down 1, financials 1.16%, tech had a tough day down 2.87, utilities down 3.1, energy didn't stand a chance, but oil price down 5%. But don't know why the JSE shares are up, because volume traded, once again, still pretty low. Value traded, 18.159 billion rand.
Thank you very much for that. The S&P 500 futures are now, they're still below 4,000, but only down 0.9% at the moment. They were down about 1.25% earlier on. David, give us an update on the Crystal Challenge, because I've never given it any airtime. And please tell us about it, please, just in case anyone's interested. David?
Well, I started this as a kind of a joke last year with 15 of us, chose 5 stocks. And, or 10 of us, and a couple of outsiders.
It was the original.
Yeah, 10, and then a couple of people said, we also want to be part of it, one of whom was Betsy Scarf, who's a pianist or an accompanist and a very, very talented musician from a very talented family. She said, I also want to play. And she beat us hands down.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, and she's still up there. Yeah, she's still up there. She's in number 4 position. So it caught – what happened is it caught everybody's imagination. And the whole point was it's a very simple competition. We said, choose 5 stocks.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we'll give you a bottle of Cristal. But I've got their bigger prizes now, you know, Cristal being the champagne, which is sponsored, which has been sponsored. So I'm looking now, but But against the backdrop, what I always find fascinating is that the leader today, because, Tungela came down as a chap, I think he pronounces Magalhaes, M-A-G-A-L-H-A-E-S. He's up 46.3%. Okay. I mean, that's quite extraordinary, mainly because of, and he hasn't got Tungela. He's got HCI, which has been a massive, and Montauk Renewables.
Yes.
And then all the other chaps have got Tungela, you know, the next few and that. And I must say that Mr. Kunze is beating me hollow. I'm down 8%.
I'm still negative.
He's down only 6%.
I think the timing was, first of all, the timing was very good. It was right at the meme stock mania. Mm. It was right when Easy Equities and the guys were running such good business, Charles Savage and his team, and more people coming into the market, opening up accounts. And I think it touched a good nerve that here were some amateurs that if they did their homework and they backed themselves and put money in, you could actually make money. And I think it's a lovely story. I think well done, David.
You can't believe, people want to do it for next year. But it's quite an administrative headache, although I just find something on FactSet, which is a total return formula, which actually, because it's the dividends that you have to monitor.
Well, let me know, because on my overpriced Reuters, which the firm kindly pay for, I can do the total return spreadsheet for you. So if you need, we actually should sit down and
handle
everything.
Yeah. Okay. So we want to do a live spreadsheet. You know,
you can. Yeah, I can do that for you.
And just do it all. Just get into a website and watch what's happening there. But listen, we've got 75 people. We'll probably go up to 100 or 125 next year.
They should probably cap it at 100, maybe.
And also, I think what's also good is that people tweet all the time, and it becomes like a community, you know, people watching and, I like to give everybody a rest.
I've always said since day one of being back in SA and managing money here, and Lindsay's going to bore me and saying I'm such a pro SA guy. But
No. I admire your pro SA stance. Don't get me wrong.
If you want to give people ownership in the business, like proper empowerment, stop giving it to a small group of shareholders. Mm. Proper ownership of the business is educating people about the stock market, educating at school level about investing, educating about putting money like Betsy's done now, and putting money into the market and getting, like you've seen, the 40-odd% return. A year because you're owning something on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange that's investing in the country.
Good
that
point.
Is empowerment. That's empowering people.
Very good indeed. If you've got the money to do so, even if it's a couple of hundred rand a month.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely. For sure. And if you learn about the stock market, then you learn about, it sounds really corny, but you learn about general finances and life
and
politics. And you learn everything.
As David has shown us, you become a market historian for life.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly learning, and you become a student of this market forever, and it's not a bad place to be.
No, and it also keeps your mind active. Now you two have done your slapping each other on the back thing and educating and everything else. I can't say that I'm not hurt, David. I can't say that I'm not. I still have pride. I wasn't invited into the champagne. It's fine. I'm just a broadcaster, and that's okay. And you two use me just to be your soapbox. It's okay. It doesn't matter. I'm very, very pleased that it's going well. Okay. You've got 125 people.
Well,
I have my own challenge at the moment.
I'll see if I'm available
to join the Crystal Challenge next year in whatever iteration it takes. But I can tell you something now that I'm a little bit busy with the UEFA Champions League Fantasy Football Challenge, actually, because the UEFA Champions League kicks off on September the 6th. So if I'm available for the next challenge, then please contact me. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities. Nick Kunze is from Sandon Private Wealth. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.